Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of A Good Drop, where every other week or so we travel across the globe to the origins of our drink today and drink its silky smooth redness.
That's right. We're talking about the silky smooth Grenache.
Hard as all get out to find on its own.
That's correct.
I'm Stu.
I'm Michael.
Cheers.
Cheers. In Australia, if you've ever drunk a GSM, which is a common term for an Australian red blend consisting of Grenache, Shiraz or Syrah, and Mourvèdre, which I'm sure I've absolutely slaughtered the pronunciation of.
Well, it's Australia, so of course it's going to be Shiraz.
Yeah, you've had Grenache, but you probably haven't had Grenache. Mm. You haven't experienced Grenache until you've had it by itself, and by itself is pretty new. Grenache didn't used to socialize by itself, it used to only go out with others, but now that's all changed.
It has. I've had a few Grenache and Shiraz blends, and I've had Shiraz on its own or Syrah on its own, and I can see why winemakers for centuries have added Grenache to their Shiraz, and that's to make it the Shiraz easier, less tannic and acidic. And it's all well and good, but we're here today to find out what on earth Grenache tastes like.
Well, that's right, because Grenache is not just a thing you add to other red wines.
No.
It is a red wine varietal and one of the noble red wines.
Also not to be confused with Grenache, which is chocolate.
Yes. Yeah. And yeah, Grenache thrives in hot, dry climates and is light, mid to full bodied, has medium tannins, medium acidity. It's...
But that depends on where you grow it as well.
Oh, yes. It likes the heat.
Mm.
But as with so many grapes, the exact climate and even the soil does make quite a difference.
Yeah. When it's made in Australia, it's even lighter and less tannic than our European cousins.
Ah, but that's not actually because of our climate. That's because we've changed the way we make wine with it. When they first began using Grenache in Australia, everything was amplified.
Of course. Yeah, because Australia is big and bold.
Yeah, and so then they adjusted the winemaking technique to make it more subtle, more finessed.
Makes sense to me.
And produce something very different to what you'd get out of France or Spain, which are, well, or even Italy. But France and Spain are the largest producers of Grenache, and Spain and Italy are considered to be the countries where it originated.
Really? I thought it was Spain.
Oh, no, don't let the Italians hear you say that. No, it originated in either Sardinia in Italy or Aragon in Spain.
Yeah.
And no one can prove which, and both claim it was them.
As indeed.
Is so often the case.
As is definitely the case here.
But by the 1800s, it was popular. And it was being grown in the Rhone Valley and Languedoc-Roussillon regions of France. And because it was very pest-resistant, it also ended up being planted to replace a number of vineyards in the Ringer region after they were destroyed by Phylloxera.
Mm. And Grenache is hugely popular in the New World in California. Some growers in 1980s, growers in the California region who are fans of Rhone region wines. That's a mouthful. Say that three times fast. They ignited interest of the grape, And in the 1990s, a quality revolution occurred in Spain, where the Spanish, where it's in Spain, where it's known as Garnacha. It's blended with Carignana, where it's blended with Carignana to make a more powerful, age-worthy red that's famous the world over.
Yeah. And it stands to reason that the wine region of the U.S. they would choose to plant it is California, because it's got that dry, warm climate and very good soil. Not that Grenache really cares about the soil so much. It'll grow almost anywhere.
Mm.
It's just to produce good wine out of it, you need that warmer weather and a very long growing season, because it needs to mature to get that full sweetness.
Mm. It's one of those wines that that takes so long to finish growing. It's actually harvested weeks after they harvest the Cabernet Sauvignon grapes, which is, they're already a late harvest grape. And then you throw in Grenache on top of that, and it's even later.
Yeah, so it's a ridiculously late harvest, but they're so hearty that during the mid-20th century, when Grenache lost popularity, because up until that point it was actually the most commonly grown red varietal in the world.
Mm.
But in the mid-20th century, it lost popularity, and a bunch of growers just abandoned the vines. They didn't, like, some of them pulled them up and replaced them with Shiraz, but a lot of them just abandoned their vines and let them go, and they didn't die. And that happened in Australia as well. They just let them be, moved on to somewhere else, focused on growing other things, and then all of a sudden, in the early 21st century, Grenache started becoming popular again, and they went back to their old vines and went, oh, they're still there. Well, let's harvest these then.
Yeah, well, oh, hey, there's free grapes, low-effort grapes.
Yeah.
And this is because this vine loves that hot, dry soil. This one's from Wikipedia, sorry, guys. But it says that Grenache vines prefer hot, dry soils that are well-drained, but it's relatively adaptable to all vineyard soils. So this includes the soils in France, what's called schist and granite soils, and you've also got stony soils in Châteauneuf-du-Pape with the heat-retentive stones. In Priorat in Spain, you've got the crumbly schist soil of the region that and it apparently that retains enough water to allow producers to avoid needing, they don't even need to irrigate. It just holds all the water from the rain. Go figure. Which is probably why those Australian winemakers were still able to have grapes from ignored vines.
Yeah, vines that had just gone wild, literally.
Vines gone wild. Good grief. Yeah, but that's not to say you should let the vines grow huge. Yield is, the size of the yield is a huge factor in how well the grapes taste.
Yes, so they want to keep them small. That's important.
Mm.
And I think they'd have definitely had to prune them back a bit before they began using them again, because Grenache first began being planted in Australia in the 1830s. And there are still vines from the 1850s producing fruit in Australia to this day.
And we have one of those wines.
Yes, because what's interesting about this is that unlike a lot of other red varietals grown in Australia, which are grown in all the wine regions, Grenache is predominantly grown in South Australia.
Hmm.
Though it has had some success in the Hunter Valley.
which would be warmer but more moist than South Australia, McLaren Vale.
Yes.
Hmm.
And so I'm curious to see what this tastes like. I mean, obviously, there are descriptions everywhere of what you can expect a Grenache to taste like.
Yeah.
We can expect it to be light, slightly tannic, slightly acidic, fruity with flavors of berry.
Yep, naturally sweet. It's kind of like a wine that plays well with others, like you said before.
Yeah, exactly right. And so what we are drinking today, and I think we should talk about it, is the 2017 Rabbit and Spaghetti McLaren Vale Grenache.
Mm, 2017, very good year. Very, very good year.
And
Does that say Prisoners of War?
It does. There's quite a long blurb on the back of this bottle, and I shall read it. As World War II swept across Northern Africa, the idyllic landscape of Australia's wine regions must have seemed a strange place of incarceration for a prisoner of war. And yet, this is where scores of captured Italian soldiers found themselves labouring on farms and vineyards in place of a generation of young men far away at war. Without this help, many a grape grower could not have endured these times. In return for their labour, the farmers shared their homes and tables with their prisoners. Rabbit and spaghetti was a staple, and from these shared meals, traditions and friendships were born that have long outlasted the war. Sourced from 100-year-old vines grown in the drifting sands of Bluett Springs in the McLaren Vale wine region, this wine is perfumed with bright red fruits. The crunchy, medium-bodied palate is balanced by the savoury and textural nuances of partial whole-bunch fermentation, resulting in a delicate and complex wine.
So this is typical of a mid-priced wine because it creates a mood with its description. Cheap wine is, or cheap drinks are like, this is this, here it is, drink it.
Yes.
And expensive wine is, you already know what this is about. You want to drink this already.
Drink it.
Yeah.
Yes. And I mean, previously I have encountered bottles with, you know, a lot on it and you go, oh, that's just a lot of faff. And then you drink it and go, oh, no, it's completely accurate.
Hmm. Well, that was a lot of faff though, but there was no description about the wine itself.
Until the last bit.
Yeah.
It did describe the wine in the last bit. The first bit described the company, the winemaker, Rabbit and Spaghetti.
True.
And true. The origin of the Rabbit and Spaghetti name, which I had wondered about, because that's the first time I've ever read the label on a Rabbit and Spaghetti wine.
Do you just pour it straight into the glass?
Straight into my mouth. Yes, I pour it straight into the glass.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Well, straight into the decanter, then half an hour later, into the glass.
Yeah. So, for reference, there are actually three types of Grenache grapes, but this is a Grenache Noir.
So many more than three types.
Well, three main types.
There are three main types, but then each region has different types as well.
I suppose, like, different subtypes.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So let's not go into that because, my word, there's a lot of them.
Yeah, but the three ones you really need to worry about are Grenache Noir, Grenache Blanc, and Grenache Gris.
Yes, and Grenache Noir is the original and the most common Grenache.
The OG.
Yes, its thin skin results in a medium ruby-coloured wine.
Which
and it's
is what we have in front of us.
What we have in front of us. It's made into red and rosé style wines.
Mm. And Grenache Blanc is a mutation. It's not the OG. It's the Wolverine of grapes, I guess. I shouldn't say that. I'll get sued by Disney.
Mm.
It's a white mutation of the Grenache grape and is mostly grown in northeast Spain as well as France's Rhone Valley. White Priorate wines made from Grenache Blanc and other white grapes are gaining popularity, but it's a important blending grape in rich southern Rhone whites.
And the Grenache Gris is also a mutation named after the grayish-pink color of its skin, and it is less well-known. It's mostly planted in France's Roussillon region, where it's blended with Grenache Noir and Blanc in dessert wines.
Hmm. Interesting.
And another interesting thing I could have mentioned earlier but didn't is that traditionally, originally, right back in the beginning of Grenache being used in wines in Australia, it was actually used for fortifieds.
That is true, yes. I remember reading that and was quite curious why I hadn't seen any ever.
Mm, and in fact, was it's a common ingredient in tawny port.
Still.
It was.
It was. Who knows whether it is now? They kind of don't like to divulge their secrets, do they? Yeah,
they don't tell you what the blend is.
Winemakers, release your secrets. We want to know.
Yes, inquisitive minds want to know.
Yeah. Anyway, as you were threatening before, we should taste this wine.
We should taste this wine.
Should we read the tasting notes first? Or
well, we did.
Oh, you did. What were they again?
It's the bit at the bottom.
Perfumed with bright red fruits. Crunchy, medium-bodied palate. Crunchy. How is a wine crunchy?
I don't think they mean literally crunchy.
Just like a sangria, only crunchy? I don't know.
Well, only one way to find out. But yeah. Let's smell. Let's check the nose.
Crunchy palate. What the hell? Oh, wow. That smells so fruity.
Immensely fruity. Wow. And definite berry.
Yeah.
Like immediate scent of berry, raspberry, definitely.
And you can't really smell any tannins either. Like with a Shiraz or Syrah, the tannins are immediately noticeable. You can say, oh, this smells beefy.
Yeah. I think there's a tiny bit of spice on the nose. And often there is a little bit of spice actually in Grenache as well. So that wouldn't surprise me.
Hmm. It's definitely one that you... Definitely a wine to savour, just based off the smell.
Ah, without a doubt.
Mm. Shall we?
Yes, let's.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Good sound.
Excellent sound. This wine sounds good.
It's crunchy. Huh.
Oh.
That is very mild in flavour.
Yeah.
Not quite what I was expecting. I don't really taste much of that berry that we were smelling. And it's a little bit bitter.
Yeah, a tiny bit. Interesting mouthfeel. Like a light coating almost down the middle of the tongue.
Hmm. Yeah. Definitely a wine that probably should be blended with others. I wonder.
Well, I'm not sure. I've drunk Grenaches by themselves before, and I'm willing to admit that we haven't decanted this.
No. But it does taste bitter. And usually a bitter wine is a sign that it's had too much aeration. Because remember back to our decanter episode.
Yes.
This is...
No, I didn't think I sloshed it as I poured it.
No, I didn't think you did either. Maybe it's sat for too long?
I don't think so.
I didn't think so either. The size of the divot is...
I think it just needs more time.
That's really... Are we drinking the same wine? That bitterness is getting worse for me.
I'm not getting that at all. Maybe I accidentally sloshed your glass.
It tastes. It smells the same. Yeah, yours is nowhere near as bitter as mine, but I only had a small sip. But it's still bitter.
Yeah, yours definitely has more bitterness on the back end somehow.
Hmm. Interesting.
Very curious.
I'm sorry to say, Mikkel, I don't like this one.
I think it just needs more time. Give it more time.
Okay. But I'm still tasting a little bit of that berry. There's hardly any acid to it at all. Very low in tannins. Very smooth.
Yeah, I'm not getting that bitterness, and I need to have more of from my glass to get rid of the taste of from your glass, which they're both from the same bottle. But as we know from pouring things into different glasses, how you pour it and what you pour it into does make a difference.
Yeah.
And I believe yours was the glass I poured first.
Huh. How interesting. But it's a teeny tiny bubble in this glass, I just noticed. But yeah, it's not great.
Yeah. In a big mouthful, I get a bit more of what you're getting.
Hmm.
But I think it's to be slowly sipped.
Yeah. But all that smoothness, this wine is supposed to sit right in, just above the middle between Pinot Noir and Shiraz.
Yes, though it is definitely, I feel as though it's more mild than that.
More mild than most of the Pinot Noirs I've had, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I can definitely see why you'd add this to a Shiraz. I have no idea what a Mourvèdre tastes like or Mourvèdre tastes like on its own. I'm curious.
Yeah, so am I actually. And I suppose if we can locate some, that's an episode.
Yeah, indeed. Winemakers, hit us up. We now know what a Grenache tastes like on its own and what a Shiraz tastes like on its own. So the next time we have a GSM, I suppose we could extrapolate a little bit.
A little bit. Though, interestingly enough, this Grenache doesn't taste much like other Grenaches I've had.
Interesting.
Yes, I thought so too. I thought so too. Mild, yes. Light, yes. Slight acidity, yes. Like on it ticks all the right boxes for the acidity, for the tannins, for the nose. But it doesn't taste the same. And maybe it's that I always decant my wines that are this age and we haven't decanted this. Or maybe it's that this one would have been better 2 weeks ago. I mean, who knows?
Maybe it just happened to spend a little bit too much time in the sun when it was getting posted.
Yeah. I mean, there's all sorts of things that can affect the flavor of a wine.
But it smells great.
Oh, it smells fantastic. Yeah.
Just the flavors are surprisingly lacking to me. So I just swelled mine and now the wine doesn't taste so bad, so bitter. So perhaps it's like you said, maybe we didn't decant it or let it breathe long enough. So I'm going to swell it a little more. You shouldn't. Just like with an aerator, you probably shouldn't use it. But this is a wine that's definitely going to taste better leaving the rest in a bottle for tomorrow.
Yes, without a doubt, because it just hasn't it hasn't sat long enough.
Hmm. Yeah. Yep.
And yeah, no, the aging advice from the winemaker is until 2022. So it's very much probably just that it hasn't breathed enough yet.
Hmm. How funny.
Oh, and they say open at least 30 minutes before serving.
Oh, we didn't do that.
We didn't do that.
We did open it about 15 minutes before we started recording, though.
We did. So if we take a brief break and come back when this is sat for the recommended length of time, we may be able to give a better idea.
Hmm.
We'll be back after these messages from nobody. And we are back, having let it sit the requisite period of time, and ready to give it one more shot.
Hmm. Another try. Still smells the same.
I was thinking it smelt a little different, but only ever so slightly.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, I suppose I can smell a little more tannins, and... yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, so let's taste again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you can taste more fruit now, and it's not so bitter. Mm.
Yeah. So it did definitely need that time.
Mm.
So I guess if there's a takeaway from this, don't rush Grenache.
Yeah, and, well, look for tasting notes on your... from on the bottle, sorry, not tasting notes, like breathing or bottling notes or whatever on the bottle or on the email from
advice from the winemaker. There's probably something about it on their website.
Yeah. I'm still surprised. It's not as nice as I expected. But yes. That could be my preference.
Very true. Very true. Everyone likes different things.
Yeah.
So, let's rate this, though, in bottle caps.
Do you want me to rate this, Mikkel? Do you really want me to rate this?
I don't think it's fair to all the other things to draw away from our usual and not rate this.
That is true. I didn't like it. And I still... I mean, it tastes better, but I still don't really like it. Having been said, it tastes typical of what I think a Grenache should taste like, from all the tasting notes I've researched and all the potential flavors a Grenache should have, this seems to fit the bill. So it's going to have to get at least a 6.5.
That's because it ticks the boxes, but it doesn't tick the boxes for you because it's not a style you like.
That, and it only, like, ticked off the boxes to say it was a Grenache. It didn't seem to excel at any particular thing, except for being smooth.
Mm. And I'll admit, at this point, I've had better Grenaches than this, but every other Grenache I've had, I've decanted.
Right.
So, I feel I need to be fair on this Grenache by not judging it by the decanted Grenaches, because we know the difference a decanter makes.
Yeah, 100%. Huge difference. So?
So, I feel I should probably give this a 7.5.
Did you rate something higher than me for once?
Well, I had to. You didn't like it. So I would say 7 or 7.5, assuming that had I decanted it, it would have been better.
Mm. And I suppose you'll find out that tomorrow or the next day when it's had time to breathe a bit longer.
Yes.
About 1 day is worth about 1 year of aging in the bottle, unopened. That's my ballpark anyway. It seems to be reasonably fair.
Right, so that advice then, if you can't decant, open the bottle, leave it overnight.
Maybe. Depends on the wine. Some wines need it. Some wines don't.
Yes, depends on the age of the wine.
Yeah. Indeed. So if you liked what you heard, everyone, be sure to hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. We are A Good Drop, all about alcohol, on your favorite podcast app, including Stitcher, Spotify, Podbean, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and many more.
You can also find us on the social media platforms, Facebook and Instaface, as A Good Drop Podcast.
Yeah, And if you want to check out our giant library of previous episodes, jump on our website, agooddrop.com.au. Or if you want to send us any comments, questions, feedback, if you have a favorite region, if you have a favorite Grenache you want us to know about, send us an email to agooddrop@gmail.com.
And do be sure to tune in next time when we go back to Mexico and talk about mezcal.
Yeah, something like piqued our interest when we were talking about the beginner basics tequila over a month ago now. And, you know, yeah, I want to know what the story is behind the worm and other things like that.
Me too. I'm curious. It'll be a fiesta.
Until next time, cheers.
Cheers.